Hi, and welcome to the official podcast of AMA Hot Topic, Search Engine Marketing, where our conference chair, Stefan Spencer, the founder and president of NetConcepts, interviews some of the industry's top thought leaders, who also happen to be speakers at the Hot Topic events taking place this spring, April 20th in San Francisco, May 25th in New York City, and June 22nd in Chicago. Without any further ado, here's Stefan Spencer.
Hi, I'm Stefan Spencer, founder and president of NetConcepts. I have here with me today Mary Lynn Tosiali, director of online marketing at DMSI. That's the Direct Marketing Services, Inc. And some of the brands that she looks after include Montgomery Ward, Wards.com, HomeVisions.com, the Design Talk blog, which is part of HomeVisions, CharlesKeith.com, Your Kids Direct, and WardsKids.com. Welcome, Mary Lynn.
Thanks, Stefan.
So if we could start off by just give me a bit of info about your background and how you came to end up in your current role with DMSI and what sort of things you do with heading up online marketing for DMSI as well.
Sure. You know, my background is in online marketing and originally, you know, started off in the journalism world and editor of a small town newspaper after graduation. So my roots are actually more in online publishing and in writing, which really lended itself well to the boom of the internet age and got involved in the internet marketing. You know, several positions then led to an online marketing role at giftcertificates.com and did that for several years. And now I'm at Direct Marketing Services, Inc., where I'm heading up the online marketing portion of the business. And, you know, in this role, you know, oversee everything in terms of acquisition, you know, specifically paid search, natural search, affiliates, you know, email marketing, and then also on the retention side, manage the retention of our online business. And that, of course, does involve our newly launched or about 1 year old blog, Design Talk, which is at designtalk.homevisions.com.
Well, since we're talking about Design Talk, let's delve a bit deeper into that. So as part of your natural search strategy, so getting higher organic or natural rankings in Google and the other engines, you guys went ahead with a blog. Can you tell me a bit more about how that came about, why a blog, and sorts of things that you looked out for in making sure that this was executed properly?
Mm-hmm, right. What we did was we had gone through and, you know, really started to see the popularity of blogs and really looked at some of the bloggers out there and what they were doing and saw that there was an opportunity for a natural fit with the HomeVisions business. One of the things that we know about the HomeVisions customer is that, you know, predominantly females, but that she is interested in having a home that's decorated well, knows a little bit about decorating, but is also curious about finding out more about how she can decorate her home to look like a pro, you know, look like she has an interior designer without having to go out and actually hire one. So what we did was we saw a lot of the blogs out there. There's a lot of mainstream content in terms of, you know, here's how to redo your kitchen, or here's how you can, you know, paint the walls in your room and, you know, maybe use some painting techniques and so forth, but really didn't see something that was for the average American, you know, for the average homemaker who's looking to do a little bit something different in their home. And so we saw that need there, and because of our product selection and our online business, saw, you know, a way that we can tie in what we're doing online with, you know, answering some of those questions for our customers.
Mm-hmm. So a blog can really have a wonderful impact on your natural search rankings by way of the links that the blog garners and the page rank that you can then flow on to your e-commerce site. Have you seen some good benefits from having a blog?
Absolutely. I mentioned my background is more in, you know, the print journalism and, you know, the writing and features reporting. So for me, you know, I was excited to be able to get back in a little bit more into that side of the business where it's not sales copy, but actually tips and advice and decorating information for the customers. And so was really excited about blending that type of content, that type of, you know, publication with what we're doing online. And so what we did was when we went to create the blog, knew that there was, you know, in terms of great content that the search engine spiders really, you know, give a lot of preference to, knew that valuable content for our customers was also valuable content for us in terms of, you know, search engine marketing and natural search optimization. So that was really kind of the two-tiered effect that we were looking for there. And so, of course, before we launched the site, you know, looked at, you know, from the natural search perspective, looked at, you know, the keywords, looked at, you know, popularity, density, you know, what are the topics that consumers are searching for, and used that to help us decide, you know, what types of categories are we going to start out with, what types of content are we going to start with, and really use that to guide us with our initial content plan. Obviously, you know, it takes a little bit of time, you know, once you launch a site to get some inbound links and to really get the spiders visiting the site. But what we saw was that initially we launched the site and we were updating content, you know, maybe a few times a week. And right off the bat, you know, certainly did see the value in updating and constantly refreshing that content. Today we're doing that daily. You know, we're going through it and posting at least one time a day with new content because we know that there is value in not only providing that great, you know, non-sales type of content for the customers and of course the search engine spiders. But the other thing there is that we know that we're constantly updating that. So it's fresh content, it's valuable content. And, you know, we have seen a significant improvement in our organic and natural search results just by having this blog.
Now, what a lot of online retailers I don't think realize is that by having a blog, you'll garner links that you would never otherwise garner. You will attract bloggers to link to you who wouldn't normally link to you because you're one of them now. You're a fellow blogger, whereas they wouldn't normally link to an e-commerce site. They will link to a fellow blogger. So having that blog, I think, has opened up new opportunities for you guys. Do you have any examples of sites that you've been able to get a link on or blog roles or bloggers who have mentioned you in passing on their own blogs or any media coverage or anything that has specifically happened because of the blog?
Definitely. You know, one of the things that we noticed is that it is very different from, you know, an affiliate program where traditionally, you know, a retailer will have a publisher, an affiliate, who has a content site and who's linking to them. And that, you know, is theoretically, it seems pretty similar to what happens with the blog, but the distinction is night and day because an affiliate is linking to garner sales. You know, they're linking to your site to get a commission on the sales. And, you know, while that's, you know, invaluable to a retailer, and that's a large part of, you know, all retailers or most retailers, you know, marketing program, for us, you know, we saw that the types of links that we were seeing to the blog, you know, were other bloggers, and these are people who are doing this for the love of the topic, for the love of the blog. And for that reason, we did see a big difference, quite a bit of variety in who was linking to us. You know, for example, teen bedrooms are, you know, that's one of the topics that's a hot topic on the site. The blog, we've got, you know, a handful of questions literally every day that are coming through from that topic. And so we saw that kids are coming and posting questions. Kids with their own blogs are linking to us, but then also, you know, decor blogs and you know, mom sites. And again, just general consumers out there with an interest in that topic are linking to us, which is significantly different than someone who's, you know, just trying to link to you for commercial purposes. And again, the benefits there on the natural search side are dramatic, especially because, you know, you're not linking through a third party or through an affiliate program redirect URL. This is someone who's linking directly to your site who, you know, oftentimes they're not linking for any other reason but just to point to the content and give that referral to you.
Mm-hmm. Right. And one thing I've found in helping grease the wheel, so to speak, and get bloggers to be more inclined to link to you is to link to them, to blog about things that they're blogging about, to give them hat tips, as they call them, where you're acknowledging a blogger for giving you a heads up to some interesting bit of content or event or news topic, whatever. So I don't know to what degree you guys are linking out, but mainly you guys are talking about stuff that doesn't really lend itself to linking out to other bloggers. That would be more of a challenge. What sort of things are you doing to reach out to bloggers and build relationships?
Right. Initially, that was a big challenge for us where our outbound links were primarily just to the Home Visions website, and they were product recommendations and saying, you know, for example, are you interested in decorating in black and white? Here are some great, you know, accents, or here's some, you know, great furniture pieces or accent rugs or so forth that you can use to create the room. And while we're still doing that, one thing that's changed is that, you know, we are more aggressive about, you know, like going out there and looking at other people's ideas. And you know, that's one of the things that we're open and pretty upfront about is that, you know, we've you know, we've got some content, we've got some recommendations, but, you know, we want to know what the consumer out there, you know, what are you doing in your room? What are you doing when you're trying to redecorate? But then also we'll link to other blogs, and, you know, Apartment Therapy, I think, is a perfect example of a site that, or, you know, blog that just does a wonderful job in engaging people to come in, you know, post ideas, post photos before and after, you know, room tours, things like that. You know, I think that that's something that, you know, that we certainly aspire to. You know, we encourage our readers to come through and send their pictures, and they do, and they come back to us, and we give them recommendations, and they send pictures and say, you know what, I took your advice, and this is what it ended up looking like. So, you know, we're definitely following the model of an apartment therapy. But I would say where we've changed and truly evolved is that we're not afraid of someone like an apartment therapy. You know, they're not competition. And I think for retailers, that's kind of a hump that you need to get over. Because a lot of times, you know, I would never, on the retail side, you know, with an e-com website, I would never link to someone who's doing the same thing as me, because that, to a certain extent, can be perceived as competition. And you know, you don't want to point your customers somewhere else. But whereas in the blogging world, there's a lot of camaraderie, and you know, there is benefit to us linking to someone like an apartment therapy, and vice versa. You know, the reciprocal link, you know, certainly helps us. But I think that that's something, you know, I would say to someone, especially a retailer, you know, who's on the fence, maybe thinking about having a blog, starting a blog, you know, that's the first, I guess, the first bit of advice that I would give is, you know, don't be afraid to link out. So if you like what they're doing, if you read it and you think, hey, this is something this is cool, this is interesting, I really like this, link to it, because your readers will see that. They'll see that degree of integrity, I guess, if you will. You know what, we're not just pointing to ourselves. We're not just trying to sell our products. We're trying to improve your experience, you know, give you some advice, some assistance, and so forth. And I think that there's really a lot of benefit to that. And then I would say the second thing that I would recommend to a retailer, to anyone who's looking at launching a blog is, you know what, go with the flow. Don't be afraid of change. When we first launched, we had in our minds what the content plan would be and what the publishing schedule would be. And we had kind of a general map, I guess, if you will. But really, and I think that was helpful. We needed that to launch. You know, we couldn't just, you know, throw something up there and see what happens. You know, we certainly needed to have a plan to launch. We were open to evolving and seeing what our readers wanted, seeing when someone comes through and they've got a question, answering those questions, creating a dialogue, and again, not being afraid to link out. You know, there are times where we'll link to Home Depot, for example, if someone's looking for a paint color or something that, you know, that we don't sell. There's no reason for us not to. You know, we're helping them create that room. We're helping to create an experience. And so that really is kind of the second bit of advice that I have, is just listen to what people are saying and don't be afraid to evolve and to change and to morph into what really suits that immediate need that's out there.
Right. And you say definitely don't be afraid to link out. I can't reiterate that enough, because from a natural search perspective, if it looks like you're hoarding your page rank by only linking to yourself, your network of sites and your internal pages, that doesn't look very natural. It's not going to help you from a natural search standpoint to hoard all that page rank. So definitely link out to others. Another thing that I think is important to point out is building this network of people that in the blogosphere you want to network with and have them follow what you're up to. One of the best ways to build relationships is through conferences and actual real-world events where you meet people in person. For example, there's specifically an event for women bloggers called Blog Her. It's a pretty large conference where all the speakers are women. Most of the attendees are women as well, and they're mostly bloggers. So being able to interject yourself into a community of people like that and build relationships in the real world is hugely valuable. Really greases the wheels as far as getting them to be more willing to link to you and to comment about what you're doing. Have you guys done any real-world networking?
Right. You know, we've developed some relationships, but a lot of them are, you know, online relationships, you know, conversations over the phone and so forth. Haven't done a lot with the conferences, but that's, you know, definitely something that we're definitely looking at doing in the coming year.
Mm-hmm. Great. The other thing, too, that I think is an important point to bring out is when you're out there in the blogosphere, it's not just about what you are blogging about on your own blog. It's also about contributing to other people's blogs through your comments. I've heard some bloggers say that you should spend half of your time commenting on other people's blogs versus blogging on your own blog. Do Do you guys go out there and comment on other people's blogs, or is that something that you're looking at doing more of in the future?
We've done it on a limited basis. We haven't done a lot of it, but when we've done that, it was really kind of a natural evolution, you know, where you develop the relationship with the blogger, and then you yourself become engaged, you know, in their dialogue, in their content, and that's definitely something that I see, you know, really increasing as well. Just, again, just as you develop those relationships, that content's going to start flowing in both directions.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. So you mentioned a specific blog that you link out to, Apartment Therapy. So that's a pretty interesting sort of blog. It doesn't fit the traditional model of, well, I have something on my mind, or there's something that I saw in the news and I'm going to blog about it. So those are the traditional sort of blogs where it's just a single blogger just spouting off whatever they think of. And that, I think, is the traditional model that an online retailer would think of if somebody suggests that they have a blog. So, okay, well, who in my company is going to run the blog and do the writing, and how often are they going to have to post, and what are they going to write about, and so forth? But there are different models that you can think of or come up with, and it's not necessarily just that traditional model that's available to you. So, for example, well, there's Apartment Therapy, where people submit photos of before and after remaking of their apartment and blogging about that. There's a very popular blog called Post Secret, which has actually been made into a book now. So Post Secret, people would send in anonymous postcards that they hand make, and they have some sort of secret that they're sharing. They're bearing their souls, you know. So there's some pretty amazing postcards that you can view on this Post Secret blog, but it's not a traditional blog. It's not, you know, somebody saying, well, you know, here's what I did today, or here's some thoughts for whatever. These are mainly just postcards, and perhaps there's a few words to go with it, but usually it's just the postcard itself, and then they turn that into a book. Another example of a non-traditional sort of blog is my company's corporate website, so netconcepts.com, and that is actually powered by WordPress. You wouldn't guess it when you looked at it, but it actually is a blog of sorts where each case study, each testimonial, each article, all these individual bits of content is a separate blog post, and comments are allowed on those. The concept of having a group blog where you get evangelists who are passionate about your products or about the industry, and getting them to blog on the blog. Have you guys thought about doing additional kinds of blogs in the future, maybe some non-traditional ones, or maybe for some different brands? And what are your thoughts around, you know, the different kinds of blogs that could be available for an online retailer?
Right. As we've, you know, really started to get into the blogging world, and, you know, it's addictive. I mean, we've really enjoyed what we're doing here. There's so many different, you know, different types of ideas and different types of blogs that we could do. Right now, you know, what we've decided to do is to really focus on the one, to keep Design Talk as, you know, the primary blog. Even though, you know, it's part of the Home Visions brand, you know, if we have, for example, Charles Keith Home, we have, or charleskeith.com, another one of our websites, we have some exclusive products that you can only find on Charles Keith. So, you know, there are times where, you know, we don't just link to Home Visions in terms of, you know, our websites that we're linking to. We may, you know, point to Charles Keith if there's a product there that, you know, that we would want to recommend. So right now, if there's a product recommendation, you know, we don't just link to Home Visions. We'll link to other brands of ours, as well as, you know, again, outside sites. And, you know, sometimes we even link to eBay. We've actually got a post that, you know, about every week or so, we will see, you know, interesting things on eBay, whether a lot of it is, you know, like some vintage items, different pieces that you can use to decorating a room. These great ideas and these kind of spin-off concepts, what we've done is we've gone through and really used that to create, you know, different themes or different features, I guess, if you will, within the blog itself. You know, the more we look around, the more ideas we have, and it really, you know, just seems to build momentum off of itself. Within our industry, you know, we're primarily in the home furnishings, home design category, I guess you could say, in terms of content for blogging, but, you know, there's so many opportunities. Ice.com is a great blog. Bluefly, I think, has one of the best, I think that's really one of the best blogs of the retail blogs that I've seen, and that's where they've effectively, you know, within the apparel category, you know, they'll link to, for example, celebrities. You know, everybody wants to know what the celebrities are wearing, and not only that, they want to know how they can create that look themselves for less. And of course, Blue Fly does a great job of that with their products and with the content on their e-commerce website. As a retailer, you know, I would say look at what's hot in society, in the media, you know, see what's new. There are a lot of opportunities, spin-offs on reality shows. I mean, I've seen quite a few great ideas out there. And if you're a retailer, regardless of how specific, you know, you're selling, I think that there's a blog opportunity. And of course, Steve Spangler, I think, has one of the greatest sites out there. I love his blog. I think that he's got some great science ideas. You know, I don't even have kids, and I go to the site and send links to my sister for my nephews. There are so many opportunities for retailers out there. I think it's just up to the retailer and how creative you want to be to find a way to mix the two together.
Yeah, so you mentioned the ice.com blogs, and in particular that Sparkle Like the Stars. That one is fantastic. So you have a very kind of irreverent sort of writing style on that blog, kind of a gossip rag sort of style to it, and great photos and how to reproduce that look for yourself. It's just, what a brilliant idea. So just kind of thinking creatively of a niche or an angle that you can take in that way, I think, is half the magic, you know, getting that right and then just being a good contributor to the blogosphere and sharing useful tips and it not being just a shill for your e-commerce site, I think is all very important. You also mentioned Steve Spangler. He's got a really interesting story in that his blog has really helped him to not only build visibility out there in the blogosphere and online, but also it's opened up amazing opportunities for him. He's quite convinced, for example, that the blog was instrumental with this whole Mentos and Diet Coke fad that's swept over the internet. You know, you add a package of Mentos to a 2-liter bottle of Diet Coke and the thing just explodes and shoots all over the place. Well, he was the first person to broadcast that on TV and online, and he started this whole thing, and he was recently featured by Time magazine on their Time.com website as a nominee for their Time 100 Most Influential People of 2006, and they had an online poll. The visitors on Time.com actually voted Steve to be the number 18 most popular, most influential person, according to, I think there are 18,000 people that voted for Steve or something like that. That's pretty amazing, and he credits that also to his blog, and that he wouldn't be where he is today online without that blog that's really established him in so many different ways, opened up opportunities as far as the media, as far as generating buzz and so forth. So it's not just about the natural search benefits, but it's also the buzz factor. It's also the credibility and the offline press opportunities that can happen because of that. So speaking of offline press opportunities, have you gotten any pickup from the mainstream media in terms of your blog?
You know, the media coverage, I think, for us has really been within the industry. I think, you know, like from the retail perspective. But, you know, we have seen some benefits, whereas print publications, magazines, for example, they'll be Googling around, you know, they'll be looking for, you know, for product ideas, product placements for articles, you know, and I think that PR angle, that product placement angle is definitely something that has helped us as well. Whereas, you know, maybe they wouldn't have found us as much before. I think it's really a testament to the effectiveness of having a blog and having the content, and it really just helps get you out there. And we've had more, you know, the product placements in the magazine, editorial promotion. We've really seen an increase, and we directly attribute that to the blog and that content. And then, of course, its impact in the natural search results.
Let's move from the blog to other sorts of natural search initiatives that you guys are involved in. Any success stories or lessons learned or anything that you'd like to share with our listeners about your natural search initiatives?
Sometimes when you really decide as a company, as an organization, to make natural search a priority, I think we've been fortunate in the sense that we always knew that it was a long-term project, that this isn't anything that start to work on it and 2 weeks later you see a significant spike in sales. I think that we were fortunate in the sense that, you know, we've always been realistic about natural search, that it is a long-term, ongoing project. But not only that, it's evolving, and, you know, things change, and you know, as a retailer and as a web publisher, you need to be able to make changes on your website. If you don't mind me throwing out a shameless plug and promotion here, Stefan, we are working with NetConcepts, and, you know, we've, as many retailers do, you know, we have a dynamic website. with a lot of dynamic products, dynamic setup. And for that reason, you know, we were struggling to, you know, to get the spiders in deep into the website. And we've been working with NetConcepts for well over a year to really help improve the spider ability. I think if that's really a word or not, but to really help us to improve the native site so the spiders can get through the site, get through the content, and then also, you know, make some changes to the website, to that content, again, for the natural search benefits for us. And we've been very, very happy with the results. You know, we've made some changes to the site itself. We've, you know, definitely been using technology to our advantage. You know, we've been evolving, I guess, if you will, and the blog certainly helps. But even aside from the blog, you know, just some of the basic principles and applying, for example, going from image-based copy to true HTML copy, it seems like a small thing. It seems like a minor change. But on the design side perspective, it was a significant change for us. But we also did see that was something that, you know, to use as an example, that did help us significantly to get that content to be digestible and readable to the spiders. So we've been happy with that. You know, again, it is an evolving, you know, constant process. You know, we don't see it as anything that's ever going to end. Our website today is still not perfect. I mean, we have some things that we know that we need to do to improve the website, and that's, you know, constantly on our list of development projects and tasks, and we'll continue to work on that in the future.
Thanks for the plug, by the way. See, you mentioned headings as being something that were a help when you were able to implement that on the GravityStream proxy, that more difficult than you might imagine to get in there and do that to the native website, to your main e-commerce site, because of various inflexibilities, if that's a word, in the platform itself and just the amount of effort and time required. Are there other areas that you've been able to explore or make improvements in through the proxy that you wouldn't have normally been able to do very efficiently or effectively with your native website? So, for example, internal hierarchical linking structure, were you able to play with the way that you're linking from, you know, one page to another within the site? Title tags, the HTML coding, maybe cleaning up some of the HTML templates, sitemap pages, or what sort of other learnings have you been able to get from that proxy?
Right, I think you just went down the list. You know, title tags, you know, definitely, again, I mentioned, you know, going from image-based text to HTML-based text, you know, sitemap, you know, we certainly had to improve our sitemap, but then also, you know, the hierarchy, the linking structure, you know, the way that we were linking from one page to the next. You know, I think that was really the immediate change, but I think that was the change that had probably one of the largest impacts on our site, because, you know, we had, I mean, you've got all these, you know, wonderful dynamic stop characters, and you know, you've got these long URLs, and the spiders don't like those URLs. And so that's a great example of where, you know, the GravityStream functionality, it helped us. But then it also helped us to see this is a problem with our site, our native site itself, and it helped us to address something that we knew needed to be fixed. And so now, you know, we've gone in, for example, on homevisions.com, you know, previously we had partner codes. It was the variable that we were using to track campaigns, and something where we've pulled that out of the URLs, and now we manage that at the session level, because we know that when we've got a URL that has, you know, in partner code equals one, and then we've got another URL that has partner code being number two, Google, for example, they see that as two different URLs, and so that dilutes the page rank for that page, even though when you go to Home Visions, it's the exact same page. It counts as two separate pages because we had that code, that tracking variable. So I think that's a great example of something where we saw the immediate need, we made the change with GravityStream, but then we also were able to validate that, test the effectiveness of it, and then roll that change to the native site as well.
Mm-hmm. All right, so you treat the proxy as kind of a test bed to kind of make the business case for different changes that could be quite difficult or expensive or kind of invasive changes that would be a big deal to make on the native site. Prove the case out and then apply those learnings to your native site.
Exactly. And just as you said, you know, it's a business case, but it's also, you never want to make any changes, roll any code that you know has a risk involved. And for us, that really helped us to validate any theory, any functionality before we, you know, even went into a testing phase and on a, you know, stage or a test site.
Uh-huh. So you mentioned the PageRank dilution effect. So just to restate that, basically, if you have three or five different versions of the same page at different URLs, you have links pointing into each of those different variations instead of having all the links pointing to one definitive version of that URL. So that leads to a dilution effect. You don't have as many of your possible links or potential links pointing to one version. You've got them split up across many versions. And that can have a pretty profound negative impact on your rankings because of the significant loss of PageRank. So you mentioned the URL structure being important, that those stop characters, the question marks, ampersands, equal signs in the URLs are not ideal. Not only do the spiders kind of look askance at those URLs because they know that they're dynamic and could end up leading them to duplicate pages that are already indexed at different URLs, could even get them caught in a spider trap getting the same page over and over again at infinite variation of different URLs. But also, we found at NetConcepts that you tend to lose more page rank as you go deeper down your site tree if it's a dynamic website than if it looks static without the stop characters and the URLs. So that's a pretty important implication because you might have great indexation on your site. In Google, you have 95% of your site indexed. But just because those pages are indexed doesn't mean they're going to rank well. So if you have a maximum amount of page rank possible to those pages, you're going to do better. And that's a pretty important concept for retailers to get. One other thing that I wanted to kind of explore with you, Mary Lynn, is this concept of internal linking structure and kind of shortcutting the process of, let's say that there's a page that's quite deep in your site and has consequently a very small sliver of PageRank score. If you were to then instead link directly from the homepage to that page, let's say that currently that page is 5 clicks away from the homepage, and you make it 1 click away from the homepage, and let's say it's a very important product, has all the right keyword themes to it and so forth that are really popular with searchers, and it's a high margin product and so forth, yet it's quite deep in the site. By making it 1 click away from the homepage, you're going to significantly boost the chances that that page is going to rank really well. What have you guys done in terms of kind of moving links around and adding links and higher level pages up in the site tree to give certain products and categories a better opportunity to rank?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. A couple things, of course, sitemap certainly helps. To kind of go back to the blog a little bit, that was something that where the blog really helped us, where let's say we had a product that, that wasn't featured on a homepage or wasn't featured on a category page, but we linked directly to it from an article, from a post on the blog. That was one way for the spiders to get to that page as opposed to having to go through those individual layers. And so that certainly helped us. But then the other thing is that, we've been creative where, typically you can, let's say, for example, you have a category for furniture, and then within furniture, you have a subcategory, and the product may be on, page 2 or page 3. That certainly, causes, you've got some products that are buried, as you said, 4 or 5 clicks from the homepage. But we've also been creative with merchandising, and that's one place that we've, really put a lot of effort towards. And a good example of that is from the homepage on Home Visions, one of the things that we did is that we have a shop by style feature as opposed to something that's really on the traditional category level, where you've got furniture or bedding and then you go into a subcategory. We have styles, contemporary, for example, French country, where, from the homepage, we're linking to those style pages, and it's where, you'll see everything from lamps and rugs and bedding to furniture. And so that way we know that, these are some top sellers, these are popular products, but these are also pages and product descriptions that have that great content that spiders are really looking for. And so that was one other way that we were able to go through and to take some of the pages, take some of the products that were several clicks away from the homepage and bring them to the forefront and make them a lot closer. One other thing that we've done is that we do feature more individual products on the homepage as opposed to just categories. And so that's something where, if a customer is looking for a category, they're 2 at most clicks away on the homepage. But yet, we also feature products, bestsellers, new products, items on sale, use those classifications from the homepage to get the customers and the spiders, of course, deeper, with fewer clicks.
Uh-huh. Another thing that you can do is to incorporate keyword-rich links into the intro copy on various category level pages. So a category page that doesn't necessarily have any copy at all to it other than the product names that are associated with the products that, are being listed on that category level page. I mean, that's a pretty obvious opportunity, I think, for many online retailers, is that they have contentless category level pages. The only content there is really the product names that are being featured. So working in an intro paragraph that has some good keyword-rich copy that helps kind of set the keyword theme for that page and helps reinforce that keyword theme, but also to incorporate some text links into that intro paragraph, I think is another secret weapon as well. If we could now switch gears here, Mary Lynn, and move to paid search, and let's talk a bit about what you guys have been able to accomplish in the area of paid search and lessons learned and successes and failures, that sort of stuff.
Sure. You know, I think, again, with paid search, is a lot of the same principles apply that you apply initially when you're doing your research for natural search, and that is looking at your top products, looking at your best sellers, looking how people are currently finding you, whether it's in paid search, what keywords are consumers clicking on the most, and then also, of course, what terms, what words are popular, are frequently searched. We did that for natural search when we went through and really determined, you know, what words are we using, what priority are we going to be giving to different products and subcategories. But the same really applied for paid search. And again, that was, you know, looking at our product catalog, looking at the products that we sell, the top sellers, you know, at the item level, but definitely at the category and subcategory level. And that's working in natural search. You know, as a retailer, you want to be sure that you're focusing on the same keywords in paid search as well. And so a lot of our efforts have been in terms of, you know, keyword development, breaking out the keyword lists, you know, in terms of diction and verbiage and seeing what terms are people searching for. Are they using flatware? Or are they using silverware? Are they using sofa or couch? You know, those are great examples of some of the research that needs to be done, and then going through and developing out the creative, the keyword, and making sure that every time you link to somewhere from a paid search ad that you're linking is as deep and as relevant as possible.
Mm-hmm. So you're working with Rim Kaufman Group, is that correct?
Correct. We're working with the Rim Kaufman Group, and we're also working with Linkshare for a few of our campaigns as well, but primarily with the Rim Kaufman Group.
Mm-hmm. And so, and you're actually co-presenting with Alan Rim Kaufman at the AMA Search Engine Marketing Hot Topic Conference. So what would be some of the things that you might pick up from an outside consultant or agency, learnings or different tactics that you wouldn't normally get from just doing it in-house? I mean, what's been the benefit of working with an agency?
Right. You know, I think it really boils down to perspective. And then also, you know, tactical execution. I think in terms of perspective, you work with products and inventory, and you get so wrapped up in it that your view is certainly going to be different than a consumer and someone kind of in the quote-unquote outside world. And so I think that's the first thing that an agency helps to provide is that perspective to really help you to see, you know what, this may be a large part of your business, but, you know, you're forgetting about this. And I think that really helps as a retailer, someone to come in and give you that objective view, especially from a search perspective. And then on the tactical side, I think every retailer out there would love to hire 5 to 6 to 7 to 8 new people to help with write copy and do some analysis and maybe help with the technological side of any kind of a campaign and so forth. You know what, I think that's all great, but I think that we all realize at the end of the day that we need to defer to the experts, and when someone is fully focusing on paid search all day long, you know, they've got the resources, they've got the knowledge and the database that they can provide that to you and really hit the ground running. So I think that we could certainly try and do this all on our own, but I think that it really does make sense to use an expert. I think, you know, we've, as retailers, again, you know, we've been doing this for years and years with design agencies and other outside agency relationships, and I think it's only natural that we're doing the same for paid search.
Mm-hmm. And how about the reporting side of things? Rim Kaufman Group is pretty rigorous in their reporting and ROI calculations and all that sort of stuff. What are the sorts of reports that you get on a regular basis, and what sort of insight do you get from those reports?
Reporting, it's easy to get buried into the reporting, and I think that as long as you're focusing on, you know, of course, the keyword, the campaign perspective, you know, what's popular, where are you getting your clicks, you know, to look at look at the channel from that perspective, but you also need to look at it on an ROI perspective. And I think in order for anyone to effectively do that and to work well with their agency, you need to work with your agency, but you also need to provide them a certain degree of information. And that's whether it's, you know, a target ROI goal or, you know, sharing some of that information with them for them to succeed and do well with your campaign. You need to share that information with them, let them know if there's any fluctuations in the business and, you know, any kind of trending information. Again, I would say they can only provide so much information to you in terms of how things have performed. And at that point, anything you do is reactive, but I think to be proactive and to provide that information to them up front really is the key to helping give them the tools that they need to succeed and to help you succeed as well.
So with paid search, I think optimization is a key strategy, as it is with natural search. So you don't just set it and forget it. You have to continually optimize and improve your keyword portfolio, the creative that you're using in the text ads, the landing pages that you're sending the people to, et cetera. So what sort of effort and resources are required to do an adequate job in optimizing your program, your paid search program?
Right. On the actual campaign itself, in terms of creative and you know, page optimization, a lot of that, you know, comes down to copywriting and technology. You know, what are you creating custom pages? Are you, you know, refining search results to make sure that the customers are landing on the right pages, on the right places? But the other thing is too, you know, you need to work within your organization, you know, work with the buyers, you know, if a product is changing, you know, maybe you have an electronic item where the new model is coming on, it's enhanced and even better than the old one, and as a result, you've got some keywords and you've got some better sales copy that you can use with that. You know, that I think is so much of the optimization techniques, I would say. You know, you focus outward and you really talk to the agencies and you look at the copy and the creative and so forth. But also, you know, don't be afraid to learn, again, more about your business and evolve and really know what's happening, what's changing. And, you know, and I've seen retailers really do a good job of knowing the product, knowing if something is changing. And anytime you've got any kind of a, you know, selling point, any type of an incentive for that product, you know, use it as much as you can, use it in that copy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all great advice. Any last words of wisdom that you'd like to share with our listeners before we close out the podcast?
You know what I would say, just to kind of sum everything up, you know, in terms of blogging, it's new and it's different. It may be a little intimidating, especially if someone hasn't really gotten into the blogging world. I would say start out, you know, look at some blogs, see what's out there. It's really an exciting opportunity. I think it's definitely a new medium for retailers to take advantage of. And you know, and don't be afraid to change. You know, you may start with one idea, evolve with it, and I think you'll be surprised at the successes and certainly, if nothing else, you know, really realize the opportunity in natural search with blogging and with that type of content. Things are changing, but I would say, you know, really embrace it. And if you don't know about whether it's some technology, whether it's, you know, blogging, you know, don't be afraid to ask. I think there's really some experts in the field, experts in the industry, and you know, these are people that this is their passion. They love to do this. You get them on the phone, and they don't want to stop talking. So, you know, I would really say see who's out there, see what they're doing, talk to them, and decide if it's right for you. But by that same token, if it's something where, you know, if you don't have the resources or you're not sure if you're going to have the resources, wait, because the blogging world, they're, you know, they're smart. They can smell a fake a mile away, and they'll know if it's purely just an online version of an infomercial. So be sure that you've got the resources, the time to dedicate to it before diving into the blogosphere.
All great advice. Well, thank you, Mary Lynn, and thank you all for listening.
You've been listening to the official podcast of AMA Hot Topics Search Engine Marketing, where Conference Chair and NetConcepts President Stefan Spencer interviews the gurus who will be speaking at our conferences in San Francisco on April 20th, New York City on May 25th, and Chicago on June 22nd. To register or for more information, visit the conference website at www.marketingpower.com/htsearch. Hope to see you there.